The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes, Saturday morning edition, because Thursday night we were kicked to the curb by the Colts. It's going to happen one more time during the football season, but that's it. So we'll be back on Thursday night, 6 o'clock. If you missed it on Saturday morning, you can go to WGCLRadio.com or go to iTunes or Google Play and just simply search for Your Money with David Hayes and subscribe, get notifications, and you can listen to the shows at your leisure. We're going to have a fun show today. We're going to talk about why currency manipulation matters and how the countries actually do it. And interest rates have been plummeting around the globe, and the U.S. bonds are right there with them. Doug Hughes is with me. He's going to be talking about that. And also the retirement income gap, how to fill it. And we did some CFCI research this week on stock market returns over 20-year periods, because most people that work with us do not have a 50-year retirement. I've yet to see one. They're all 20, 25. If you get 30 years in retirement, fantastic. Hopefully you were healthy throughout that entire journey. But most people have shorter retirement periods. So to put it into perspective so that you use reasonable expectations and estimates when you are planning, that's going to be the topic of that. And then later, trade-offs. You know, we have trade-offs in life, right? Everything you do, you give something up. And we're going to talk about trade-offs in life, trade-offs in money. That'll be a fun segment as well. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by my buddy Dirk Bland over at Kenny Bland Auctions. They're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning of the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. Or if you just have a bunch of stuff in your garage that could be of value, remember, one man's junk is another man's treasure. Dirk and his group will come out and pick it up and take it to the auction house and get rid of it for you, and then bring you $100 bills at dinner on Friday night. Well, that's actually just me. I'm not sure he'll do that for everybody. All right, from By the Numbers. Since then, this is incredible. It's been 8 years since the U.S. was downgraded by the S&P from its top credit rating. Since that time in 2011, what's happened? Well, the 10-year Treasury has fallen from 2.57 all the way down to 2.85. 2.65 this past week, or it's 2.60, 1.60. So that's a big drop. And then the market has been up 189%, the S&P has, since we had that downgrade. So obviously no one really cared. The S&P did fall initially after the first day of trading after the downgrade by 6.6%, but obviously it rallied since then. You know, the bond market is up, we're going to talk about this later, 6.3% year to date. The last time the bond market had a calendar year performance better than 6.3% was back in 11, or 8 years ago, right? We were just talking about that, when it gained 7.8%. We're going to explain this, okay? So you have to stick around, but we're going to really educate you on how these bond values work. Around the globe, there are $13 trillion worth of negative yielding government bonds in the world today. In other words, a bond investor who would hold that debt instrument to maturity would receive back less money over the bond's lifetime than what they put in. Oh, man, that's incredible. And Doug loves to talk about consumer price index and inflation, but the government uses a measure of inflation. They use 8 major categories, and then they weight them to produce the overall total CPI. The largest weighting is actually housing at 42%. Medical is only 8%. But what the Federal Reserve likes to do, they use something called the PCE index, which is actually the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index. Housing is given a 24% weighting, while medical care is 22%. So much better way to look at that, because when most of your population, well, not most, but a lot of your population is aging and they're spending more on medical stuff, it makes sense that the weighting of the inflation index would have a higher waiting on medical care. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little Chinese currency manipulation. Those guys over there, you can't trust them. All right, we'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house. Dugger, I was just telling you on the way in as I moved that microphone to see your bright blue eyes.
Thank you, sir.
And bushy tail.
Yes.
That it's a lot of fun when we do this show together.
It is. We've only done it for 16 years now, but it's still just as much fun today as it was at the very beginning.
It's a lot of fun. It just flows well. We can bounce things off of each other. You have, you know, random thoughts that come in that are sometimes unrelated to anything you're really talking about. Yeah. That's why it's fun to have Hughes in. And also, in my non-nicotine stained hands, which they've never been nicotine stained, I've never smoked in my life, is our book.
Brand new, well, our
newly revised.
Newly revised.
Today's Guide to Retirement Planning.
Doesn't it look handsome?
Has a great new look to it. See it, Robbie?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. It is available currently in e-version only, even though we have a few copies for our review. It will be out all the way, so you can get it on Amazon. Go in there and type Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. You will be able to get the e-version, which I think is only like $1.99 or $3. We're still setting the price on this. I think it's going to be $16.95, but don't hold me to it. So we ordered a bunch of them because some local employers are buying them for their employees, so we're grateful for that. It'll be a lot of fun to get that out. But we're very, very
great,
proud of that.
Great chapters and great information. They're everything from life planning to investments to estate planning and just really good stuff.
It's all in there. As we said last week, it's like the old Ragu sauce. It's in there. It's all in there. That shows my age, right? All right, so let's talk about what happened with the market recently when we had the Chinese currency falling and the markets were reacting, and finally the Chinese stepped in and did something about it to peg the currency. But let me explain this. In order for a country to weaken its currency, it sells its own currency and buys foreign currency, normally U.S. dollars, okay? Now, that just follows the law of supply and demand. If there's more money being flown out there on the market, it's going to drop the price. Makes sense? All right. Now, the result is manipulation of a country's currency. That reduces the demand for it, while our own currency, like the U.S., will strengthen because more people are buying it. Our dollar is relatively strong right now, and I've always told people when the dollar is strong, you take it overseas. It buys more stuff. When it's weak, you keep it home. My Canada trip was a great example. I went up to Canada fishing with my dad and son. Our entire bill was $5,300 for the week. When American Express did the exchange, it ended up being like $4,600.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a win.
Win.
A strong dollar.
Yeah.
Made me buy more things there, cheaper. So the question was, why did the Chinese decide to push their currency down? Because we're putting tariffs on, right? So the way to make their stuff cheaper is to drop the value of their currency so they can sell more stuff at a still low price. Now, know this, that our currency is currently worth about 7 times more than the yuan, all right? So they're a far cry from having a currency that's even remotely as strong as the U.S. dollar. And I know in the U.S., we're always talking about all the debt we have and all this, and I do it all the time. You might think, why in the world would your dollar be so strong? Well, without being terribly politically incorrect, I'm going to say it. You're the tallest short person in the room, so that's how I'm going to say it. Doug, this is something that's not the first time it's happened, but the currency was falling quickly as they started to sell. Guess what? Everyone else started to sell, and it was still getting spiraling out of control, and they were like, whoop, we're going to put a stop to this.
So that's right, David. When the Chinese began to lower their currency, we began to see global markets just really begin to unwind all over the place. But you mentioned something. This is the first time this happened. I can remember that President George W. Bush was talking about the Chinese manipulating their currency back in his administration. So this is not an issue that's just popped up one time. This has been a form of business that the Chinese have done for long periods of time to try to control things from their angle on how tariffs and expenses are going.
And we have too.
Absolutely.
I mean,
this is not
it.
Like it's an isolated event that's happened one time.
Yeah,
it's happened many times.
If I said that it's not happened before, I just meant that this is not the first time it's happened. It's happened many, many times before. Something else that I thought interesting, and I brought this up last week briefly, you know, as we go to borrow, and we're going to talk later about this, but when the U.S. is scheduled to borrow $1.3 trillion or something like that of debt this year, probably do it again next year, you wonder, who in the world's buying all this stuff? Well, you may not know this, that the number one buyer of the U.S. Treasuries is actually the Social Security Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. They're the number one owner of U.S. Treasuries. The Chinese certainly own some. The Japanese certainly own some. Insurance companies own them. People own them, whatever, but it's owned by Social Security. If the trust fund is planning to or scheduled to go broke in, like, whatever, 2036 or something,
that's right,
then they're not going to be a net buyer of treasuries. They'll be a net seller. So the biggest owner and buyer of treasuries will be out of the market completely. So when we say, when will this come to an end? When will this, I've always said, when people quit buying our bonds. When that happens, then the house of cards start to fall. So it could be a really long time before we start to see, you know, the taxes go crazy, wild high, all that. But I'm going to talk later in the show about some troubling stuff that I was reading this week on taxes and where many people believe they should be and where they're headed. And again, if you don't think that that's possible, simply look back in the rearview mirror and see where we've been before. But we've just got so many things going on, Duggar, that we have never been experienced before.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of balls in the air right now.
A lot of balls in the air. And David, to your point, it's now becoming a little more streamlined. It's becoming a little more mainline. The people who are kind of beginning to line up and say, hey, something's got to give here. We're going to have to do this one way or another. And it's not fringe people. It's people that are in the mainline, as I'm saying. And I as things begin to build, a consensus begins to build, you almost begin to see this happening in a not an upheaval kind of way, but just kind of a stark reality kind of way.
So the last segment in the show, we're going to talk about when we were down in French Lick doing some education for folks. We'll be there again Monday night. Hopefully we have some new listeners that showed up at the class. I scared them to death, and I'm going to talk about how I did that. And really, it was just to make them aware of the situation and then how to get out of the way of higher taxes down the road. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, interest rates have been plummeting around the globe. $13 trillion, I think I reported in News of the Week, with negative yields around the world. The U.S. Treasury rates are down. So we want to explain to you why this has been such a great year for bonds. Because I think for the average person listening, they're going to say, wait a second, interest rates are down. That's good for bonds. We'll explain all of that when we come back and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Doug Hughes is in the house with me. We've got some good stuff here, so I'm going to keep an eye on the time to make sure that we get it all in. But interest rates, they've been plummeting around the world, and that's caused the bond market to do fantastic. And I'm just going to explain it briefly, and I'm going to have Doug take the reins and even go a little bit deeper. So let's say that you own a bond that's paying 5%. It doesn't mature for 20 years. You know what you're going to get, how long you're going to get it. You know what you get at maturity. That's what you own. And interest rates start to go down. So the U.S. Treasury 10-year, let's say, was at 3. You know, now it's 1.5. Your bond, because it's paying 5, is worth a lot of money to people. If my new money can only buy 1.5 or maybe 1 or 2 points over the Treasury bond yield, like maybe 3 or 3.5, my 5% bond is going to be worth more. Now, the people out there who have been saying rates are going up, have been saying it for 8 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. We have been in the low for long camp. You've heard us talk about that here on the show. We have not been terribly afraid about taking what's called duration risk, which is the measurement of interest rate sensitivity. I would encourage you, if you have a bond fund, that you look at that and you look for the word duration. If it says 7 or 10 or 12 or 3, that's the measurement of interest rate sensitivity. So what does that mean? If interest rates move up 1% or down 1%, your fund or your bonds will move by that duration, by 7%, 6%, 5, 10, whatever it might be. So when interest rates went from 3 down to almost 1.5, if you had a 20 duration, can you imagine? So the bond market has taken, they take all of the bonds, the ones that mature like this year, all the ones out to 30 years, and they came up with that average of having a strong year already of 6.5%. Doug, bonds in our mind, because we know this and do this, are pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
But for most people, they have a harder time understanding bonds than they do stocks.
It's a much bigger market, for
yep.
one thing. There's a lot of different types of issues. There are a lot of different maturity dates, a lot of different credit qualities that are associated with bonds. And, you know, for a long time, people just thought the word bond meant safe and interest payments.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've learned, to your point, over the last 10 years is that there can be as many people who predict the bond market wrong as predict the stock market wrong.
I would say more people predict the bond market wrong.
I was being kind there,
yeah.
Yes, because there's always someone who has some prediction about the stock market, but there's also, in our world, and if people are listening, a lot of people predicting a lot of things about the bond market. And to your point, David, what people are owning right now looks very different than what they're owning 5 years mm-hmm. ago, they're owning 10 years ago, because people bought bonds for different reasons. Sometimes people buy bonds for downside protection. They think that if stocks are go down, you want to have bonds. Other people buy them for generous revenue streams and predictable revenue streams. And all these bonds work in a different way. But you bring up the word duration. I can remember early in my years doing this, and people would talk about the word duration. Mm-hmm. They always thought the word duration meant how long do the bonds last inside the portfolio.
Yeah.
The duration of time, not the duration of meaning the measurement. So a very misunderstood market, but to your point, this year the bond market is just doing outstanding, and people need to be aware, though, the reason why this happens. You read it earlier that the one time the bond market was a better return than it is currently right now was 2011,
yeah,
I think,
8 years
right?
ago.
8 years ago. So right now, when you're opening your savings, seeing your bonds having this very large, quick return, and I will say that's too. A lot of bond investors aren't used to it. This is a quick return. I mean, the last 2 or 3 weeks have been quick
right.
move to the upside,
yeah,
which is not normal in the bond market.
It's not normal. In 2015, we had the same thing happen mm-hmm. to us in the fall. The rates went up fast. We went almost just the complete opposite. Now they've come back low. And that's simply saying to the world, listen, no one's expecting a ton of growth. No one's expecting a lot of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really why the Fed has been given the permission to start cutting interest rates again to combat that, to try to get some more money in the system, to get that inflation that they're hoping to see into the system. But, you know, you folks, you cannot create demand. You just cannot create demand. And demand is what drives and buying and the supply and demand. That's what really drives inflation, right? So we're starting to see a little wage growth here and there. You know, that's a good thing, I guess. But we're just in territories that we've never been before. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality later on when we get into expectations of returns. You know, if you have a bond market that if you can go out and buy corporates, and they're going to yield 3%. The yield is what you get paid in, like, the coupon.
Right.
So the price and the coupon together, that's your total return.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no bonds out there there are junk bonds probably. No bonds out there that have paid 6.5% for the last 6 months.
You're really stretching out, yeah.
13% for the year. You might have 3 or 4% of that's coming from the interest being mm-hmm. paid, and the rest is from price movements. So as easy as it came, it could easily go. But I had a client, Duggar, that called, or actually was in the office, and she said, I never look at this, but when the market dropped a bunch that day, I thought I'd peak. And she goes, it wasn't as bad as what I thought. I said, because you're balanced and your bonds were up, mm-hmm. up, and your market, you know, so really wasn't that bad. All right, when we come back, let's take a quick break. We're going to talk about the retirement income gap. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then getting into these perspectives as far as these returns and what you can expect in your retirement time period. It's very, very interesting stuff. This came from True CFCI Research today. All right. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. My favorite bump music, as you all know. I love it. It makes me think of beaches and cold drinks and sunshine. You like beaches too, Doug?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, so some interesting things came across my desk this week, and it continued to emphasize what's been called the retirement income gap. And it's, you know, I was even talking to someone this week that they had a big portfolio. They needed a lot of income. They had no other income sources except for Social Security. So all of it had to come from their plan. And it was an incredibly, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, it's an incredibly difficult thing to do, to go from putting money in to pulling money out. She simply said, I just don't want to do it. I'm scared. I don't want to do it. I'll just live off what I have in the bank and try to make it. And I said, why would you do that? If we can put together a good income plan for you, then you need to do it. So here's what I want to talk about. Just a few things. I want to talk about trade-offs, because this is something that Doug and I were talking about a week ago or so, and I said, that's going to be a really good topic for the show. We don't have a lot of stuff written down about it. We just wanted to have a discussion. But the trade-off is this. Like, if I want to, you know, go vacation more, I want to fish more, and I want to do a lot of recreational things more, I might have to sacrifice some income. If I want to make more money, if I want to, you know, get that overtime in, then I probably am not going to be going to all my kids' football and basketball and baseball games and soccer games. So there's all these life trade-offs that we're all pretty aware of. You know, everything that you want, you have to give something up on the other side. Now, some would argue that that's not really true. And if unless you're a really, I don't know, special individual, it's typically true for most of us that anything we get, we give something up. Doug, investments are no different. If I want safety, I'm likely to have lower returns. Mm-hmm. If I want higher returns, I have to exchange that for more risk. If I want guaranteed income, I might have to exchange my liquidity, my cash, for more income. It's a trade-off everywhere we turn.
Everywhere we turn. And when we talk about portfolios, David, the word that we use that kind of rises to the top, it's not just diversified, it's coordinated.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is an exchange there. You can have all U.S. equities, and you can go up and down with the markets, and maybe you'll hit it right, maybe you won't. But if you don't want to have that, to exchange that for a very smooth income distribution plan, it has to be coordinated, not just diversified. And that's what we're talking about, is stepping away from just saying stocks, bonds, cash, real estate, and saying, what are some of these things? And when you do that, it changes the complexion of the way, perhaps, that you've invested in the past. Because in the past, you probably accumulated money in vehicles such as 401ks, right, and Roth IRAs and brokerage accounts. You may have to begin using other vehicles, and you're exchanging that 25 years in mutual funds in your 401k for maybe some other vehicles. So it is an exchange, and it is a trade-off. But it's not, as we say all the time, it's not what something is, it's what it does. And so sometimes you're trading one thing for another. It's not always a bad deal.
And guaranteed forms of income, folks, is an annuity, period. I mean, Social Security annuities, pensions, whatever. Those are guaranteed forms of income. Client came in today. He had been pitched the idea of taking some of IU money and converting it to a lifetime annuity. And we had done a great financial plan for him. And I said, well, let's just put it in and see what it looks like. Well, when he converted this $280,000 to a guaranteed lifetime income, he's 71. She's wife 70. It produced about $1,280 a month of guaranteed lifetime income. Well, when we do planning, we plan you live a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
We planned that he was going to live to 95, she was going to live to 94 or something like that. And when you live that long, that guaranteed form of income actually, at the end, left you with more money for your kids or grandkids, whatever. So we started dialing back the ages. Like, at what age do you cross over? What happened to be, you know, right in that late 80s, early 90s age where, you know, it didn't make sense to annuitize because they didn't live long enough to collect it. Well, I said to him, now, if you like that idea, I would do it because I think it's great. But I can assure you that if you died at 87, your last thought's not going to be, man, I shouldn't have annuitized that income plan. Right. I should have kept the money. So, you know, there's a lot of trade-offs in our world, our financial world. So, yeah.
Well, and one other thing too, David, I shared this with the group earlier. We always, when we talk about keeping up with the Joneses, we always assume that's people who are younger, married, have kids, and they're trying to vacation like their friends, trying to have houses like their friends and cars like their friends, send their kids the same school as their friends, keeping up with the Joneses. Well, what we have found to be true is that sometimes people take that same personality trait into retirement, and they try to keep up with the Joneses, but now it's not on the way up. It's on how they're living their retirement, and they try to vacation again. They try to have the same homes. And so we go back to this word called budget. It's income analysis. And how do you make sure you cover those gaps? Mm-hmm. What are those gaps and where are they? And sometimes we have to have very serious conversations with the clients about not keeping up with the Joneses. And sometimes you're saying that to people who are in their mid-60s or early 70s, not when they're just in their 30s and 40s.
Right, right. And, you know, I was looking at some statistics I got from Jackson National, and it says in the early 80s, 60% of people that work for a company had a pension plan, and now only 4% do. Life expectancy, there's a 25% chance that a married couple, that one person will go to 97.
Wow.
That's where guaranteed lifetime income works. And then I also thought this was cool, the language disconnect, because, you know, here we are talking favorably about annuities. We're just telling you what they are and what they do and what kind of peace of mind they can give you. We're not saying that it's right for everybody, but, you know, I think it's going to become more and more right for more people as less people have pensions. But it was interesting, the language disconnect. Framed as a pure investment, 21% of people chose the annuity. So not very many people, when it's just posed as an investment, said, yeah, that's a good investment. But framed as a way to provide retirement income over a long period, 72% chose the annuity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not what it is, it's what it does. And more than half of financial advisors believe that at least some of their clients who don't own annuities will run out of money during retirement. We have a great financial planning program. I encourage anyone to call and check it out. It costs, if you're not a client, it costs $500, so it's not a big expense, but put a little skin in the game. And anytime you add an annuity to the income plan, it will generally decrease what you're going to leave behind, but increase the probability of success of your plan dramatically. So there's got to be something to it. But I thought the language disconnect was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting, yeah.
Now, let's talk about assumptions. So we just talked about bonds. They're yielding low yields, like, you know, corporate bonds maybe in the threes somewhere right now. But I want to talk to you about stock market returns. Because, hold on a second, let me reach for the sky if I have it over here. You know, when you hear about average returns in the S&P 500, most people look at the last 50 years or whatever, and they say, well, over the last 50 years, the S&P 500 has averaged 10.2%, 9.8%, whatever that number is. And I'm like, okay, that may very well be true. But why don't we look at different time frames where a person may have retired into? And I randomly picked these, 1955 to 1975, 1970 to 1990, 1990 to 2010, each of them 20-year periods. And I had someone at the office do that wonderful CFCI research, and here's what we found out. From 1955 to 1975, this is kind of setting you up, Doug, because I don't think you've seen this.
Mm-hmm.
What would you guess would have been the point-to-point S&P 500 return?
Percentage-wise?
Without dividends.
Percentage-wise?
Percentage-wise. Average annual return.
Average annual percentage-wise without dividends, right?
Without dividends, 1955 to 75.
6%.
4.2. 1970, the year it all started for me, to 1990, the return was 6.9.
Mm-hmm.
And from 1990 through 2010, 1990, remember that?
Yeah.
Through 2010, 6.4%.
6.4.
That one shocked me, actually.
Yeah, I would have thought that would have been higher than that.
And from 1955 to 2010, that's 55 years, 6.5%. Now, that is without the dividend. Why did I do it this way? Because I wanted you to know how important the dividend has been over time. Over that entire 55 years, the average dividend, 3%. Okay? Over the last 10 years, 2%. So it's just interesting to see what having an investment without the dividend does. So in this case, you know, that 4.2 is more like 7.2, but the 6.9 more like, you know, 9.9, the 6.4 like 9.4, whatever. But in all of these cases, none of them really hit that number that we talked about. And when you look at the return year by year, the sequence risk would destroy you.
Would destroy you, yep.
Because even though I average 4.2 or 6.9 or whatever that number is, if you start pulling 3 or 4 or 5% out of your portfolio, and you looked at some of these years where the market was down big time, and you're compounding your way to zero quickly. And that's why you have to take that longevity risk, that sequence risk, completely off the table to have a worry-free retirement. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. All right, I'm checking the time here real quick. We are going to take another break. Let me see what I've got next. All right, so... yeah, so we'll get perfect. So we are going to talk about some of the things we talked about to the soon-to-be retirees we spoke to last mm-hmm. week at French Lick, as I scared the jeebies out of them when it comes to higher taxes. We'll be right back and scare you too. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Man, I just keep looking through what Americans want and what they may not realize, and that's annuities. You know, and that's all I'm going to say about it. So, it's based on math and science, folks. That's all I'm going to say. Guaranteed lifetime income. When it's phrased a certain way, people are like, yeah, I want that. And then when you say, well, that's an annuity, they're like, wait, I've heard bad things about annuities. So, after 25 years, I really don't even care anymore what people think about what it is that we believe. You either do or you don't, and that's okay with me.
Yeah.
So, listen, here's something that I truly believe in. And when I ask the audience, and I do this every time I do a workshop on this, the first thing I say, it's not, hi, I'm David Hayes, and, you might have heard from me from this or that, I wrote a book, all that stuff, none of that. The first thing I do, I stand there and I say, how many of you in this room believe that taxes will be higher in the future than they are today? And Doug, everyone always raises their hand.
Everyone does.
I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, left, right, center, whatever, they raise their hands. And then I say, why do you think that? And they all get it. They say debt, spending, whatever. And I'm like, you guys have got it. But you have to understand that right now, 77 cents of every dollar that comes into the IRS coffers is paying for four things: Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. And we're planning to borrow another $1.3 trillion this year. On top of the 23 trillion we already have, that is a runaway train. That's what we call non-discretionary spending. We've already committed to that. We've already committed to Medicare. We've already committed to Social Security. We've already committed to the interest on the debt of the bonds that we borrowed. We've already committed to Medicaid. So there's not really that much discretionary spending that you could dial back. The only way this could happen is cut benefits or increase taxes, and there is no appetite on either side of the aisle to cut benefits. And I know that you listening, you don't want your benefits cut. I don't want mine either. But there has to be a solution. And the only solution is to raise taxes. Now, who says what about our tax situation and where it needs to go? Someone called the Congressional Budget Office. It's like the CPA's Office for America. They have been saying for the last several years that taxes have to double for us to pay for the things we've already promised, or America will go bankrupt, according to David Walker, former comptroller of the CBU. So these are credible people. So I look at everyone, I say, listen, you have been told forever to put money in your 401k, tax deferred, meaning I don't want to pay the tax today, I'm going to defer that and pay it when I pull it out. We've all been told this because they say you're going to be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. For some people, that may be true, but for most people, I don't believe it will be. So here's what, when I tell them this, Doug, they're like, oh my gosh, how do I get out of this thing? How do I get out of this partnership? So I say to them, listen, it's no different than you going to see my dad at the bank and saying, hey, Jerry, I'd like to get a loan on my house. And he says, no problem, here it is. I wish it was that easy. And then you say, hey, Jerry, what's the interest rate? And he's like, don't worry about it. I'll let you know when I need your money. That's the deal we've made with the IRS and with 401ks. You have a partner in that 401k. It is the IRS. They can tell you how much you have to take out, when you have to take it out, and how much of it they get. Now, what kind of partnership is that? It's a crappy one. So all of this money that we've been saving in tax-deferred accounts, we need to figure out a way to move it from taxable to tax-free. And under the current tax law, we understand that we have a short amount of time. It's until December 31st of 2025. That's when the current tax law sunsets. We go back to at least where we were. But as the writing is on the wall, and as Doug said earlier in the program, the appetite is shifting to more mainstream, that yes, we do think taxes are going to have to go up. I rarely watch nighttime TV, but I was watching the other day, and the governor of New York, who's running for president, he has a website called taxthemtohell.com or something like that. And
Bill de Blasio.
Yes. Yeah. And he is just simply saying, that we need to have taxes at 70%. And people, I know, say, you're an absolute insane. How will we ever get rates to 70%? And he says, and I turned to my wife, and she didn't care, but I'm like, he's saying exactly what I've been saying. Look back. If you don't think we can go there, go back in the future and look. And he brought up President Kennedy. He brought up Eisenhower. Back then, guess what? The top marginal rate was right there, 70%. And they might say, who cares? Tax the rich people all you want. It's not just the rich people. It's everybody. When the top goes up, the bottom goes up too. So back then, the bottom rate was 20. What's the bottom rate today? It's zero. It's zero. Then you go to 10, and then you go to 12. And you can have up to like $105,000 of income if you're married filing joint and have an effective tax rate after you figure in the 0, the 10, and the 12, but about 8. That's cheap. So the idea is to move money from taxable to tax-free by doing Roth conversions. If you have a 401k, you put your money into the Roth side, pay the tax now so you don't pay it later. That's what you should be doing. So here's the last analogy. You've heard it before if you're a longtime listener. If you were a farmer, I was down at Apple Acres this weekend, seeing our old buddy Dave Byers down there. It was a Saturday. Dave was in there working. It was fantastic to see him. Bought peaches, bought apples. It was fun. I love that place. And I think about it when I think about people like Dave. Would Dave rather pay taxes on the seed that made that apple tree and produced those apples forever, in some cases, or don't pay tax on the seed, but pay tax on every single apple that that tree produced? I mean, everyone's listening right now saying, well, you pay it on the seed, right? Well, that's what a Roth is. You pay it on the seed money, but never, ever, ever again. As much harvest as that creates, if you can move that money at a 12% rate and you get just 2 years of 6% returns in the Roth, you've got all your tax money back. And then it's tax-free forever, every year, every year, every year. Doug, I know I'm passionate about this. You even introduced me to the group and said, listen, you'll hear the passion in his voice. But when you know you're right, you know you're right. If you're not sure, you're wishy-washy. And by the time we were done, everyone was like deer in the headlights, like, how in the world do I do this? Am I too old? You know, and I'm like, listen, do as much as you can that's practical. And understand that this isn't just about you getting out of the crosshairs of higher taxes down the road. It's about legacy. And when I talk legacy, if you're married, it's the death of the first spouse. Because what happens at that moment is that your income gets cut because you always lose at least one check, Social Security, maybe even a pension, and your taxes double. They go from married filing joint to single. So everything gets cut in half. Your standard deduction goes from 20, 24 to 12. Your 10% bracket, you know, goes from 19 to 9. You know, that's, it just squishes everything down in half. So all of a sudden, I'm sitting here thinking, what in the world? Now I have to take more money out of my retirement account to live. I'm paying double the taxes I was when I was married. It's a never-ending thing. So if you can sit down, and listen, time is of the essence. I mean, every year that goes by that we talk about this is one less year that we have to get you out of the crosshairs of higher taxes. So here we are sitting in August of 2019. So you have 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25, and then the game's over. Mm. Game is over. Mm-hmm. So if you don't get that message, just turn your radio off. Because
well, there's no bumper sticker, David, that says there are two things that are sure in life, death and taxes. And you have a relationship with taxes, and that relationship needs to be reviewed and analyzed and see what's going on. And you've been talking about this for several years now. Yeah. We've been doing this for a long time. And just now, it's like other things. It now is trickling into the mainstream, and people are beginning to believe it. Forget whatever politician tells you they're going to lower your taxes or not. At some point, someone's going to have to raise their hand and say, folks, this is how we're going to have to solve this.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Now, listen, is it income taxes alone that's going to bail us out? Probably not. It could be that payroll taxes go higher to help on Social Security. It could be that we have a national sales tax that will tax luxury items or, you know, people. What I know, it could come in a lot of different ways. So I'm not just saying it's income taxes. It could come in other ways, but I don't know which way it's going to come. So I'm just going to do what I can do, which is take the money that I have sitting here that's never been taxed and do my very best to move it to tax-free. There's a lot of ways to do it, not just Roth conversions. There's other ways as well. So listen, I'm just not saying, hey, a call to action. Everyone needs to call our office and get some tax analysis done because we would be overwhelmed. But I am saying this, that if that's you, please do contact us, and we are happy to help show you what to do and how to do it. It's not as difficult as it maybe sounds. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, wrap up the big shoe. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Just a few minutes left in the program. Hey, our Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, newly revised edition, is out online. Not the actual book, but the ebook is. We think the book will be available here in the next week or two. And, yeah, we hope that it's a good educational piece for everyone. And we ordered several of them because we had people that have been wanting us to order them books. So we have that coming as well. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you missed any of it, catch it on iTunes or Google Play, or head over to WGCLradio.com and, you know, re-listen to some stuff. Re-listen to the tax talk, re-listen to, you know, what it is about average returns and why they don't matter. And hopefully this stuff sticks, some of it sticks. And if you have a financial advisor, great. Write down some of that stuff. Go and ask them about it. Say, hey, how can I take this longevity risk that Hayes is talking about off the table? You know, how can I get out of the crosshairs of higher taxes down the road? So, you know, our firm, even though I think it's the greatest firm and that has the greatest people and all of that, I mean, I'm obviously biased. I mean, I think that way about my son most of the time. So there is a bias there. But, you know, there's a lot of very capable people out there to help. And I'm just encouraging people not to do it on their own, to seek out some advice and to take that advice for sure. Duggar, I am next week. So, I'm a little bit out of sorts right here, but we will be back next week. But I'm going to record the show next week. Prior to Thursday. I'm going to do it on Wednesday because I am going with some friends and Misty. We're going to go see Queen down in Nashville. Yeah, Thursday night. So okay. That just came about last night at the Mexican place.
There you go.
All good things.
Isn't it amazing with all these devices in our hands? It used to be you just sit there and have dinner and go home and maybe find out about something, but I could just imagine some of you sitting around the table with your phones out saying, let's get tickets for Queen, and just did it right there at the table.
Yeah, so we just decided to do it and went home, checked my schedule, and thought, yeah, I can move some things around. I can probably record the show on Wednesday, and let's knock it out and head down there. And then just still planning that Amazon River fishing trip with Dad and some of my friends from the Ed Slot Group.
Yeah.
That's been quite an ordeal. Still have to get my last measles shot, so once that's done and all of my fishing gear has been delivered, I think I'm ready to go. I'm completely broke, but I think I'm ready to go.
It will be a trip of a lifetime.
All right, I can't wait to report back. All right, everyone, I hope you have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next Thursday night at 6 o'clock. Bye-bye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.